10:06.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. 187. That's the number of Israeli reservists who've signed a petition saying they refuse to serve beyond what's called the Green Line, that is, inside Palestinian territories. Their petition says that, quote, the price of occupation is the loss of Israeli Defense Forces' human character and the corruption of the entire Israeli society. Now, since this petition first appeared in Israeli newspapers last month, the government has taken a harsh approach towards the reservists who signed it. Prime Minister Ariel Sharon has told one Israeli newspaper that it will be the beginning of the end of democracy if soldiers don't carry out the decisions of the elected government. Many in the Israeli left are seizing upon this petition as a sign that opposition to Sharon is growing. But a majority of Israelis, haunted by contemporary visions of suicide bombers and border gun battles, feel only contempt for the refuseniks. Connection listeners, what do you think is the significance of this new opposition? You can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can join us also online at theconnection.org. Now, there's an organization in Israel which has supported soldier refuseniks for almost 20 years. It's called Yesh Gavul, which translates to There Is a Limit. Peretz Kidron is with the group Yesh Gavul, and he joins us from Jerusalem. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
You have worked for a long time with soldiers refusing to fight in different places at different times. What do you see as new or different about this particular petition?
Well, what's new at this particular moment in time is that the army has tried very hard since the beginning of the current intifada to sweep the whole issue of refusals under the rug. I should tell you that my organization has processed over 400 refusals by soldiers who have already reported to their units and refused to take part in the repression of the Palestinian population. And the army contrived till now to keep all this quiet. The new declaration has blown that wide open. It's now on the table. It's an issue of public debate. And it's focusing the opposition to the government's policy and to the occupation in general.
Now, help us with your understanding of the numbers, because 187 signatures is a pretty tiny fraction of the tens of thousands of reservists in Israel.
That's true, but let me translate it into American terms. You're a rather larger population. Multiply by that number by 40, which is approximately the difference between Israel and the United States, and imagine what would happen in your country if 7,000 Marines said that they wouldn't be prepared to go along with a policy they consider criminal and counterproductive. I think it would have a major effect in your country, too, and that's what it's having here.
Mr. Kidron, stay with us. I'd like to bring another two guests into the conversation from the BBC studios in Jerusalem. We have Yaron Ezrahi, who's a writer and political scientist at Hebrew University, and and Ephraim Inbar is a political scientist at Bar-Ilan University, where he directs the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. Thanks to both of you for coming in. Ephraim, I'll begin with you. How much importance do you attach to this petition, this protest?
I will first take issue with your description of the territories as Palestinian territories. I think it's a very biased one. I would agree to dispute a territory. This is part of what most Jews consider their homeland, even if they are willing to part with certain parts of it. About those that refuse to serve, I think this is definitely a problem for the Israeli society, which after all, has to fight its way in order to survive in the Middle East. And if we'll have larger numbers of people that serve in the military, I think we'll definitely be in trouble. So far, this refusal problem has been very marginal over the past 25 years. And the Israeli society was mature enough, basically, to go along and to allow those people to continue to be part of society.
And Yaron Ezrahi, you have written a book called Rubber Bullets, looking at the history of the Israeli army. And one of the things in your book that you talk about is that there is a tradition of perhaps a slightly greater freedom of speech within the IDF than within other armies. Do you think that this protest takes that to a new level?
Well, we have to remember we don't talk here about soldiers of the regular army, but reservists who most of the year are citizens of Israel. But this group is a high-quality group of officers with a very impressive combative record. And I believe that soldiers who know that the use of force has legal and moral limits are a blessing for democracy. And therefore, these are the kind of soldiers that also know when they fight that they are fighting with all their devotion to defend their own country. But the occupied territories is not part of Israel. It is a place where the Israeli governments have sent Israelis to settle after Israel was already a state recognized internationally with enormous military power, and it cannot be defined as anything other than colonies which right now, because of the inability of the governments to withdraw from them, are endangering the Zionist enterprise, as these soldiers write.
Mr. Inbar, do you agree with that characterization?
No, and this is probably why you invited me here. No, I don't think that the characterization of the territories is correct. I think we were forced to take those territories in 67 when there was no Palestinian state. I think the Israeli society has always been willing to for partition between the Israeli and the new Palestinian people. This has been the traditional Zionist stand. It was clearly proven just 2 years ago by the Barak government when Israel was willing to make tremendous concessions and the Palestinians rejected it. I think that most Israelis feel that this war was imposed upon Israel, and the Palestinian violence must be responded by corresponding Israeli violence. So far, I think the Israeli government has been very careful and very cautious in using measured force against the Palestinians. It could be much, much worse. But we have to remember what we are talking about. We are talking about war. And war is about inflicting pain. About the soldiers, I'm not sure that it's such a high-quality group. Some of them belong to the rather more war-weary elements in Israeli society, more assimilated in terms of Jewish identity. And I'm not sure that I would laud them in moral terms. I think that to a great extent, their moral judgment has been blurred by, you know, by leftists, communists, and other type of radicals in Israeli society.
I want to talk a little bit further about that moral judgment, about that motivation, and I'll turn back to Peretz Kidron. Your group, Yesh Gvul, represents refuseniks like these soldiers, and there's a sub-debate going on in Israel with some people saying, oh, their protest is just political or that it's personal. Tell me how you see it.
Well, I think that it, unlike Mr. Inbar, I think that it goes very strongly with Jewish tradition and even more so with Jewish history and particularly recent Jewish history that we rebel at the concept of soldiers blindly obeying orders and blindly following a political leadership that leads them into all sorts of places that they shouldn't be. I should point out that if it weren't for the protests of the soldiers who refused to take part in the Lebanon War, it's quite likely that the Israeli army would still be somewhere in the vicinity of Beirut. And that war cost us hundreds of dead, Israeli dead, before the powers that be were finally convinced that the protests were in place and that, that the protesters were the ones that had the real interests of the country at heart and not the generals who led us into that adventure, as they're leading us into this present adventure. And the moral aspect is very clear. Despite everything that Mr. Inbar says, the occupation has been in place for 35 years. For 35 years, the Palestinian people have been kept under the Israeli thumb. They're deprived of the most elementary rights, and it's the Israeli army that's there, its units that are in action there, continuing to deprive them of those rights. And that is the basic moral issue. This isn't something that erupted 16 months ago. It's a whole generation that's been living under these conditions. And now the Palestinians demand their basic rights, and there are many in Israel who believe that it's in Israel's interest to have satisfied democratic neighbors and not a cowed Bantustan ruled by Israeli military might.
Yaron Israhi, the petition that the soldiers, the reservists, excuse me, are signing talks about not wanting to be drawn into illegal orders or even raising the possibility of finding themselves later accused of war crimes. Specifically, what are they speaking about?
Well, it has been established that when a state sends its populations with the intention into occupied territories to change its demographic composition and use force to this effect, that could be defined as a war crime. If, in addition to this, as this soldier writes, in the various checkpoints, Israeli soldiers are encouraged to expel, starve, humiliate, and block the movements of pregnant women and sick people who are Palestinians, this is not only a crime, it's also corrupting the principles of army service in Israel. I think Yitzhak Rabin, our slain prime minister, one of the reasons which led him to the Oslo agreements was, as the most revered soldier in Israel's modern history, he said to his aides, if we continue with this occupation, the Israeli army will be weakened and Israeli soldiers will lose their sense of conviction in the righteousness of their cause. And when time comes to defend our country, the army will not be able to fulfill its functions. And I think these soldiers are very patriotic soldiers. They recognize that the present government has crossed many red lines and they have deep concern, which is shared by a very large part of the Israeli population. Even though there are only 187 people, they speak for many. There was a radio poll which suggested that at least a third of the people asked, which is an unprecedented number, accepted their justification or their motives for their action, even though some of them had reservations about the organized act. There is a profound understanding also on the part of top Israeli military leader, like former head of the Israeli Navy and the Israeli Secret Services, Ami Ayalon, who appeared on the Israeli television a few days ago and said that he expects Israeli soldiers to disobey illegal instructions like this. I think this, if anything, shows the strength and the resiliency of the soldiers of Israel and gives a lot of people here hope that we will very soon will start moving in a different direction.
Mr. Kidron, just very briefly, the soldiers, the reservists say they would like to get 500 signatures on the petition. What difference would that make over the number they have now?
Well, the more the merrier. The more, the greater the effect. It's not just a matter of numbers. These are very fine bunch of young men who've all served with frontline combat units, and even the chief of staff who's attacking them in every possible way had to concede that these are men who've given dedicated, devoted service and risked their lives for the defense of Israel.
Peretz Kidron, thank you very much for being with us. He's with the group Yesh Gavul, a group that supports soldiers who are refusing to serve. There are 187 of them with their names on a petition in Israel right now. We'll continue our conversation about that in just a few moments. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
You are.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you join us in our conversation about a protest movement that's underway in Israel. 187 reservists have signed a petition saying they don't want to serve across what is commonly known as the Green Line. Excuse me. My two guests are Yaron Israhi. He is writer and political scientist at Hebrew University, recent book of his is Rubber Bullets, Power and Conscience in Modern Israel. And Ephraim Inbar is a political scientist at Bar-Ilan University, director of the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. Mr. Inbar, the other two guests have been talking about the moral dilemma that the reservists might face by going into the occupied territories. In one sense, isn't it better for them to say, look, I just don't want to go there, rather than having them go there and make that decision at some point when it might, in fact, jeopardize their compatriots?
First of all, I agree that there is a moral dilemma and there is definitely a problem, you know, young people facing Palestinian population. And it's not an easy dilemma, and I do not undermine the pressures that those people, including my son, who served for some time there, are facing. But I think that the right approach would be if there is a case in which there is clear a situation in which they think that something immoral happens, they can make a decision at that time. But to say I'm not ready to serve in a certain part of the country or beyond a certain border, I think it's very problematic. And, there are other moral decisions that could have been made. Just to mention, you know, already in old philosophy discourse, Socrates preferred to take the cup of poison rather than disobey the laws of his democratic city. So I'm not sure that this is the only moral choice that can be made in face of such dilemmas.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to Woburn, Massachusetts. Assad is joining us. Hello, Assad.
Morning, Dick. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Just two questions, as a matter of fact. One for Mr. Kidron and Mr. Yassiahi. We're seeing the media coverage. I think the petitions were being signed and were being publicized in various Israeli newspapers, in the Haaretz, Maariv, on the Yedioth Ahronot. But what exactly is media coverage like in the Arab world regarding the situation?
Mr. Yassiahi, that's for you.
I really don't know what is the media coverage in the Arab world, but the media coverage in Israel suggests that this letter of the reserve soldiers send profound shockwaves across the country up to the top, and that they have succeeded very well in sending a message that there may be limit to the legitimate use of Israeli force. And this reminds me very much of what happened during the Lebanese war when Sharon, who was the leader of this war, was a defense minister, and he probably cannot forget the fact that there were some units which expressed the resistance to enter Beirut because of the concern of a lot of civilian casualties. And I think it's ironic and interesting that it is the same Sharon who is now the prime minister, who is being served the same notice. And I'm sure it's not going to escape him.
It's also of some interest that the people who have signed the petition have also agreed, apparently it's part of the of what they're signing, that they will not talk to foreign journalists about this. What's the insight behind that?
If you ask me, I think they are very careful to make it in a matter of an internal debate. They want to raise the issue with their peers and with the rest of the Israeli society. And in this matter, they have succeeded. And I think at such a debate, in the face of merciless terrorist acts against Israeli civilians, is showing the strength of the Israeli social and political discourse at this moment. And I believe there is a change. There is a recent change. There is a greater willingness to be assertive about criticizing the Sharon government. And one of the most important reasons for this is that this is perhaps the only recent government which is sending the soldiers with guns against the Palestinians at a time that the government is not only not encouraging but actually stalling any process of peace, because a large part of the Israeli public believes that we can stay in the occupied territories and we should defend the settlers there only if the premise of our staying there is that we are temporarily there.
Mr. Inbar, though, isn't it a little bit naive of the soldiers to expect that by making this arrangement that they wouldn't talk about it with foreign journalists, that they'd somehow be able to keep the debate within the country? Doesn't it end up being useful outside?
I would take issue with Yaron's description of the government policies because, first of all, it's not a Sharon government. It's a national unity government. And, you know, to some extent, it's misleading to call it a Sharon government. It's a Sharon-Peres government. And he probably voted for Peres, those guys. And they are in the government. And I think the premise of the government is to try to reach an interim agreement rather than a comprehensive agreement with the Palestinians. This is a mandate of the government. And the attempt to reach a comprehensive agreement failed in the times of Barak, and I don't think it could have been reached because of the Palestinians are simply unripe for reaching a historic compromise with Zionist movement. Therefore, we should continue in an incremental approach, a Kissingerian step-by-step approach. And this government is trying to do it. Unfortunately, Arafat is not a partner for this attempt. I think this has been clearer to everybody in the world, in Washington as well as in the capitals of Europe. And this, what makes this war, you know, so just in the eyes of so many Israelis, it's basically what we call in Israel a war of no choice, in which most Israelis feel the call to defend their homeland. As Yaron mentioned, we are facing a terrible campaign of terrorists who act indiscriminately against children and civilians. This type of activity which the Palestinians conduct do not make it easier for Israel to try to have a peace treaty with the Palestinians. Actually, what we are facing, and we have to understand it, what we are facing basically is a failed state like Afghanistan. Arafat was unable despite the chance he was given, to establish a modern political structure in which there is monopoly over force.
But what these reservists are objecting to is the targeted killings by the IDF, which has admitted to killing over 20 people. Some say it may be as many as 50. Often the word assassination is used. They don't want to be a part of the force that is using that kind of tactic against the Palestinians.
They insist that this is not self-defense. The Israeli defense forces, when they are defending remote settlements in the hearts of Palestinian populations, have nothing to do with Israeli security. There is a liability to Israeli security, and I think there is a big difference between Mr. Inbar and myself as to what he calls our homeland. I think that he would include the occupied territories in his definition of homeland. I think these soldiers and I, and a very large part of Israel, certainly the majority which supported the territorial compromise of Oslo and the Barak proposals, believe that our homeland reaches the green line, and anything that we do beyond that may be illegal and certainly morally reprehensible.
Our telephone number is 1-800.
Every Jew regards all of land of Israel as his homeland.
Well,
let me finish, please. Some of us are ready to part with some of our homeland in order to reach some kind of compromise. But to regard Judea and Samaria as not of your homeland is probably problematic in terms of your Jewish identity.
Well, you talk religiously, I'm talking politically.
Gentlemen, let's let some of our callers in. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Assad, thank you for your call to Joseph, who's joining us now from Brighton, Massachusetts. Joseph. Hi, Joseph. Are you there?
Yes. Thank you for giving me...
You're going to have to turn your radio down, Joseph. We're hearing a horrible echo on the line.
All right. I can speak...
We still have quite an echo. What I'll ask you to do, Joseph, is be very brief with your question. Could you do that?
Thank you very much.
Joseph, I'm sorry. We're going to move along to another caller because we've got a number of people lined up to join us. We're going to Hannah now, who's calling in from Boston. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is that fortunately for all of us, Israel is a democracy, And as well as America can have American Taliban, we can have Israeli Talibans as well. But the problem is that we can look at them the same way as Americans look at American Taliban and court-martial them, especially in the time when we are fighting for survival with a terrorist entity.
Are you saying, Hannah, that the people who are refusing to serve are equated in your mind with the Taliban?
Absolutely. They're destroying the spirit. And our spirit, when it's absolutely shattered with a terrorist attack. More than that, if you have any doubt, I would like everybody to look on the webpage islamonline.com and make sure that they have absolutely no presence of Israel. And religiously, they explain that suicide bombing and killing civilians is very, very good.
There is actually another place on the web that I was going to suggest people go, and that you can find that link on our website at theconnection.org, and that is the petition, because it has spawned quite a spirited conversation. By going to the petition website, clicking on the discussion forum, you can see these different points of view being exchanged in Israel. I want to bring into the conversation Captain Jacob Dalal, who is a spokesman for the Israeli Defense Force, and ask, under the circumstances at this point, Captain Dalal, is the IDF acting against the people who are refusing to serve?
If I may just take advantage for a second, I just want to update you and your listeners that a terrorist was found on a bus in Jerusalem with an explosive belt strapped to himself. Luckily, he was caught and apprehended on the bus before he was able to blow himself up.
This was earlier today?
This was just now, within the last hour. So just for the benefit of your listeners. Regarding your question, we're taking this on a very case-by-case basis, on an individual basis. What has happened as of now is that the petitioners have been relieved of their command positions, and they will, each of them on an individual basis with their individual superior commander, will be brought in to discuss what they see themselves doing and how they see themselves progressing and serving in the Army.
Is it your expectation that there will be disciplinary action taken against some or many of the people who signed the petition?
It is possible, but that depends on how they present what they are willing or not willing to do to their commanders, and not based on advertisements in newspapers.
Captain Dalal, it's my information that about 400 people have in fact refused since the beginning of the latest Palestinian Intifada, and that those have been dealt with, as you suggest, on a case-by-case basis. But because these people have chosen to join together in signing a petition, does that in any way change the equation as far as in the manner in which the Army will respond?
No, we are trying to keep this as an individual case basis. I cannot confirm or deny any figures, and I don't know the figures. We don't release the figures. The figures that were reported sound quite bloated to me.
Mm-hmm.
We have not had any problem until now, certainly, regarding motivation since the start of the violence in September 2000. There has been quite the opposite. We have been very reassured by the motivation of our soldiers, including and especially the reserve soldiers, where we have in reserve combat battalions almost 100% show-up rate. I think that reflects more than anything else the fact that the people in the Army, be it reserve people who are civilians most of the year and come in to do duty about a month a year, or with the regular soldiers, they really understand what they're doing and why they're doing it, especially under the circumstances we're facing now.
Hannah suggested that these people be treated like Israeli Taliban. What do you think of that?
I think that's quite an exaggeration. I don't want to say anything more than that.
Let me just ask Yaron and Ephraim, the characterization of these people as traitors who must be punished to the degree that the Taliban would be punished. Perhaps Ephraim Inbar, you can begin on that.
No, I simply think those are morally misguided people, but I think they are probably good citizens, and I don't think the Army sees them as enemies.
So simply just to release them from their duties and let them go away without making much of a splash, or should they be disciplined?
If they refuse coming, I think, to service, they should be punished like everybody else. But I think the army is smart enough not to call them. And this was probably what will happen from the experience in previous wars. We always had a very small number of people that refused to serve. And generally, the army was very astute in dealing with the problem.
Yaron Ezrahi, the manner in which the country or the army chooses to respond to the people who've signed the petition, is that going to be key in watching what kind of effect this will have in a broader sense in Israeli society?
Yes, I think that our military spokesman who just appeared on radio has done a very good job. He's very moderate, he's very cautious, like his chief of staff. The Israeli army is handling this with silk gloves, because they know this is a very serious force, moral force, which is being represented by this group. We are talking here about combative officers with a military record, which is very impressive. This woman, Hana, who calls them Taliban, has used a term which I have not seen in the entire debate in Israeli press or radio, and it's very interesting to me that it comes from the outside. I don't think she belongs here. But the point is that the Israeli army is dealing with this matter very cautiously, which suggests that this was a very effective message. The army has no choice. The army has to object.
Last quick question to Captain Dalal, if I can. And,
yes.
Captain Dalal, that, you know, as it's being characterized, the army's being, in a broad sense, very careful with this. Just as you work in headquarters or talk to other soldiers, though, is this considered something that's controversial, that's something difficult for the IDF?
Well, there is a certain amount of upset or even outrage among other reserve soldiers who we've been speaking to since this episode broke out, and they're very upset because they really think that it gives the reserve soldiers in general a very bad name, and they certainly don't agree with it. I think that we have in these reserve battalions, in these combat reserve battalions from which these petitioners come, people rearranging their vacations to make sure that when they know they're being called up to duty, that they not be abroad, that they be here, and that they come to duty. So that's the sort of feedback that we've been getting.
Captain Dalal, I want to thank you for being with us on the program. Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to continue our conversation talking about the petition being signed by reservists in Israel saying that they do not want to fight in the occupied territories. Your thoughts on that? 1-800-423-8255. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR.
612.
You're listening to The Connection on National Public Radio. This hour we're talking about a petition which has been signed by fewer than 200 Israeli reservists, and one of the clauses that they have put their signatures to is that we shall not continue to fight beyond the 1967 borders in order to dominate, expel, starve, and humiliate an entire people. It's pretty strong language. It's sparking quite a debate in Israel. If you want to take a look at how that debate is playing out, you can go to the web link which we have to that petition. It's on our site, theconnection.org, and click on discussion forum and see how the emails are balancing out in that conversation. With us today, Yaron Ezrahi. He is writer and political scientist at Hebrew University. His most recent book is Rubber Bullets, Power and Conscience in Modern Israel. And Ephraim Inbar is political scientist at Bar-Ilan University, director of the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. Joining us also from Malden, Massachusetts now is Samantha. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to relate a personal anecdote that I think maybe shed some light on the difficult moral situation that the Israeli soldiers are in during the uprising. I used to live and work in Jerusalem, and one day after I had dropped my husband off at work in Ramallah, we have to go through three checkpoints to get back and forth between Jerusalem and Ramallah. And on the way back, I was coming up to the first checkpoint, and the soldiers did, which I found out afterwards was a drill. And basically what happened is as I approached to go through the checkpoint, about 10 soldiers jumped out of their jeeps and assumed attack positions. It looked like they were going to open fire on my car, and so I immediately slammed into the side of the checkpoint. And the response of the soldiers was to get very angry at me.
Sorry, you slammed into the side of the checkpoint, meaning you crashed the car?
It was a plastic barrier, so it was only a bit of a fender bender. But what happened is I went up onto the steering wheel,
right.
And I was 5 months pregnant at the time. And so I didn't move. I was in shock, and they wanted me to get quickly out of the way and were screaming at me. And I happened to speak Hebrew, so I started screaming back at them, saying, you know, hey, I'm pregnant. What are you guys doing? And they thought that was just hysterical, and they jumped on the hood of my car and, you know, jiggled their hips and stuck the gun in the window. And this one soldier came over and sort of shooed them all away and stuck his head in the car and said, you know, are you okay? Do you need a doctor? Do you need anything? And I yelled at him and I said, you know, the problem with you people is that you don't treat us like human beings. And he said, I know. This was in Hebrew. He said, I know. We treat you like animals. But I always wonder what happened to that particular soldier. And maybe I'm hoping that maybe he's part of this group now, because it's not nice what these soldiers do to the people, and it can't be nice for them to have to go to such extremes.
Ephraim Inbar, you served. You said that your son served. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to you know, speak to a secondhand account from Samantha about what she saw, but it still is the question about whether or not you have orders that you have to follow that are hard to carry out.
I think that most orders, almost with no exception, probably are not difficult to carry out. The problem is that, you know, c'est la ton qui fait la musique. Sometimes young people get out of discipline. You should be aware that those young soldiers live under difficult pressure. They don't meet only pregnant women. They meet also terrorists. They are shot at, and they have to take care of their own lives. So the situation is a bit more complicated than this woman, Samantha, described.
Samantha?
Hello?
Hi there. I wondered if you wanted to speak back to Ephraim.
Well, the problem is that, yes, I mean, Israel faces, you know, terrorist attacks, but when they can consider that there are about 3 million people who are suffering from these conditions on a daily basis, it should make, and I think it does make, Israelis stop and think. And the reason I'm in the States right now is that I was too afraid to have my baby in Jerusalem because I honestly didn't know if I would be able, even with an American passport, would be able to make it to a hospital because I knew too many people who were denied medical care, could not get through checkpoints, and know people who lost their babies. And I wasn't going to take that chance, and so I left. But I'm lucky I was able to do that. So the ramifications of keeping 3 million people trapped behind checkpoints in this manner ought to factor into his mind when he thinks about what these soldiers are being asked to do.
Let's hear a little bit from Yaron Israhi, because part of...
Can I just respond for one moment?
Yes, please.
I fully agree that, you know, it's not a pleasant situation. And personally, I feel quite a lot of empathy for the Palestinians for being put into this position by their senseless leadership. But just to one example, the last attack in Jerusalem, not the one that was reported today, we've seen one... lady coming by an Palestinian ambulance to Jerusalem. So, you know, it's a dilemma. You see an ambulance and you are under orders not to let it in. And sometimes you see there a pregnant woman, but it can be also a terrorist. And we've seen it. So I think we should appreciate more, you know, the difficulties of the Israelis taking care of their, you know, basic security.
I believe that some of these difficulties are self-inflicted, because we shouldn't send our soldiers to Netzarim and Tomer and other places. We have no business being there, and if we won't be there, we would cut down many of the problems. But I must say that, very unfortunately, the recourse of the fundamentalist Palestinians to terror has very seriously undermined the cause of the Palestinians in the eyes of the Israelis, and it has practically wrecked the Israeli peace movement, which is beginning to revive now. And we should remember that this terror has been blurring the fact that many Israelis supported Palestinian resistance to the occupation. When the Palestinians resorted to terror, it has changed the picture. I think one of the things that everybody is hoping is that the Palestinian Authority will be able to repress terror and as a result create and help create the conditions which could be useful to resume peace negotiations. But Arik Sharon, we have to say on the other side, seems to lack a vision of peace. And I believe he is motivated by political reasons, because if negotiations start to become serious, he's going to lose the support of his right-wing coalition and lose the domestic fight against Benjamin Netanyahu, who is to his right. So part of the problem is that the present leader of Israel is preferring short-term political benefits to himself in his own party to what seems by many people as the necessities for the security and the future of Israel and the region.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Samantha, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
To Richmond, North Carolina. Maurice is joining us. Hi, Maurice.
Yes, I'm not actually in Richmond. I'm in North Carolina, south of Richmond.
Okay.
My comment is this. Every soldier does have a moral obligation to determine whether an order is a legitimate order, a legal order or not. I have some experience with the American military, having been in there for 32 years. Now, whether or not the soldier's individual decision is a correct one or not can only be determined by a court-martial. That's the way it would be in the American. In other words, if an officer comes in and orders a soldier to go out and shoot civilians, he has the moral obligation to say, no, I refuse to do so, and then subsequently should be tried to find out, was he correct in his decision or not? The same thing should be done with these soldiers. Are they correct or not in their decision not to carry out these orders? And if so, they should be supported, and if not, they should be appropriately punished. That's my comment to the situation.
Maurice, thanks a lot for your call. Yaron Israhi, he's suggesting let a court make the decision about whether or not the soldier is doing the right thing or not, rather than a petition. What about it?
I accept every word that this gentleman has said, because I think that these soldiers have actually taken a risk. Their position is controversial. While the reason they gave for their action are endorsed by a very large public, their act of refusing to serve is problematic for any army, because suppose they will be ordered eventually, the Israeli army will be ordered to evacuate settlements. Then right-wing soldiers will refuse to obey these orders. So in some way, any act of refusal to serve army orders is problematic. And I agree that soldiers who did not lose their moral judgment are called sometimes to take personal responsibility and take risks, and they might be court-martialed and will have to defend their position retrospectively.
To David in Cambridge, Massachusetts. David?
Hi, is this the connection?
Go ahead.
Hello, I'm just calling in to ask if there's a way that I can write to my support to these soldiers in Israel.
I guess the answer was probably earlier in the program when I mentioned that there is a link on our website to the petition site, and I'm sure that there is a place there where you can take a look at the debate that's going on and decide what to do at that point. I want to go to Ephraim Inbar on something that you've written in the past, Ephraim, because you've written that the reoccupation of this land is not of the land being occupied by the Palestinians at this point is not a far-fetched topic. That's the direction that Sharon appears to be taking Israel at this point. If that's the case, isn't that in large part what some of these reservists may be resisting?
Well, first of all, I didn't say that Sharon is taking Israel into this direction. Actually, I thought the opposite. I said that most of the Israelis, including the government, are against this scenario and prefer partition.
Right, in principle, separation. But that may not be an option.
Basically, you know, there are three options in dealing with territories. One is to find Palestinians that are ready to rule them and to be good neighbors to Israel. The other option, which we tried before, was occupation. I think the Israelis don't stomach occupation. We're actually very bad at it. We are not ruthless enough as other people. And this is why the Oslo Agreement came about. A third option, which actually we are seeing already now, is chaos. And as an answer to chaos, we may be forced unwillingly, and I'm not looking forward to this scenario, but this is an option that I think is maybe developing ahead of us, that we may have to reoccupy parts of those cities because we want to check if there are no Katyushas there, if there are no missiles, and we just heard another bit of news today that the IDF entered into a town, probably Jenin, and captured a lorry with Qassam 2 missiles. So this type of scenario, unless the Palestinians, you know, put their home in order, is a possibility.
Well, I believe that conscience and commitment to values is just as important in war of survival as missiles. And Zionism as a movement of the liberation of the Jewish people could not survive and could not continue to mobilize our youth if it is achieving its goals by enslaving another people, denying them the rights according to the very principles on which we established the State of Israel. And anybody who doesn't see this contradiction is damaging and corrupting to the Israeli society will never understand these soldiers and will never understand the strength of the Israeli youth who are serving in the Israeli public, in the Israeli army.
Mr. Inbar, Yaron Ezrahi said...
Our opponents are not as principled as Yaron Ezrahi and some of the Israeli society.
But even if I accept that, does that mean the lowest common denominator ought to be the measure that you said?
Well, there is a debate. There is a debate in Israel, and in that debate, Ephraim and myself are on opposite sides of the fence, and I certainly wish very elegantly that he will lose.
Unfortunately for Yaron Ezrahi, I seem to be mainstream, and he's in a great minority.
This is
I
the position of every extremist says that he is a centrist.
I'm not an extremist. I'm in favor of partition.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us.
Bye-bye.
Ephraim Inbar is political scientist at Bar-Ilan University, where he directs the Begin Sadat Center for Strategic Studies. Yaron Ezrahi is writer and political scientist at Hebrew University. His most recent book is Rubber Bullets and Power and Conscience in Modern Israel. Earlier in the program, we talked with Peretz Kidron. He is with the group Yesh Gevul, a group that supports Israeli soldiers who refuse to serve, and also Captain Jacob Dalal, a spokesperson for the Israeli Defense Force. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugarts. Our senior producer is Graham Smith. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.